I met some pretty impressive teenagers the other day. 11th graders from the Gann Academy outside Boston. They spent the last school year collecting old documents and artifacts that became a museum exhibit on the history of disability in America. It's on display not far from the Fernald School, an abandoned institution for people with disabilities that has a checkered past. And before we go in, I need volunteers to take turns being my guide. How about you? Would you like
sure.
to? Okay. All right.
Good.
So let's do this. Can you introduce yourself for me?
Yeah. I'm Eliana Garut.
And we're outside the Charles River Museum of Industry and Innovation. This is where you've done this exhibit.
Yeah.
And can you show me around?
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
Let's do it. Eliana leads me through the front door of the big brick building.
The entrance is this way.
Past a large glossy sign that reads Division, Unity, Hardship, and Progress. It's the theme that drives the students' project. This is like a legit museum that you guys
are in. Yeah, I know. Really, really, like, I think at the beginning of the year, none of us really realized this was going to be the final product. Like, it really looks like a professionally done exhibit.
Eliana says the students' mission was to shine a light on a story that's neglected in American history. Stories like this one.
This is the 1999 Jerry Lewis Muscular Dystrophy Association Telethon.
She takes me to a display on Jerry Lewis, even though Eliana and her classmates are hardly old enough to remember the comedian's annual MDA Labor Day Telethon.
How are you?
Okay.
You want to smile? You know that this whole show is about guys like you, and everybody here is doing everything we can to make things better. You know that?
Yes.
Okay.
The exhibit uses archival tape like this to remind us of the impact that Jerry Lewis had. He raised $2.5 billion over his four-plus decades as the telethon's host. But it also reminds us that some of the kids he featured on the program grew up to resent the way Lewis pitied their condition. There's a 1973 MDA poster of him standing behind an empty wheelchair. The ominous caption on the ad says, "Last year, thousands of little kids were sent to the chair."
We talked a lot about victimizing people with disabilities and the effect that that has on society, and that is very much what he's doing here. And I think that his goal with that was just to, you know, make people watching his show be more compelled to donate to his cause. And so I think it's not true that someone with muscular dystrophy can't live a normal life, but he was very much painting these kids as that.
Now, this is complicated because I can see here on your exhibit, the display, it says it's an obit, the MDA's obituary for Jerry Lewis after he died, and it says, "What Jerry did for our cause is immeasurable." So you've kind
yeah.
of gotten at some of the
right.
complications here of,
right.
of what it means to be an advocate for someone with disabilities.
Exactly. Like, there weren't, like, everything that he did wasn't bad. You know, he raised a lot of money. But I think the reason that I like this exhibit so much is because there's this back and forth. Like, okay, well, he did, you know, contribute a lot. Does that matter, even if he did all of these great things?
The students asked similar questions about the nearby Fernald School, once known as a leading home for children with disabilities, until researchers experimented on young boys in the 1940s by feeding them radioactive Quaker oats.
Not for any reason other than to track where the oats were going through their body to prove that Quaker oats were good for you, because they were trying to track the nutrients.
There are artifacts from the school and from history.
You know what I want to see? Is the hearing aid. Who can show me that?
So it's right over here.
Introducing Sarah Levin.
Here we have our mayor's earphones.
The mayor's earphones.
The mayor's earphones. This is the first hearing aid almost that we see in history, which is really cool. And it's the first time that we see people who are hard of hearing or deaf trying to be kind of accommodated to or have their needs met.
And this looks like it was made in 1905. That
oh,
was
yeah,
when the
yeah.
patent came down. It just
mm-hmm.
looks like an old-fashioned pair of headphones.
Yeah, and that's kind of what it was. It was basically just kind of a pair of headphones that you would put on, and it would amplify sound.
Sarah's classmate, Ben Schwartz, is up next.
One other thing in this exhibit that I found really compelling was this this leaflet.
It's an anti-suffrage leaflet from 1915.
After reading this more closely, we learned that this leaflet was actually put out by women, and they were petitioning to have no vote in the state elections.
Why do you think they would do that?
So there are a few reasons why I think this would happen. One of them is that during this time, a lot of women were diagnosed with something called hysteria, which was just a term that was applied to them as unstable and unable to make rational decisions.
And it sounds like they bought into it a little.
Yes. They genuinely started thinking that they were unstable and they had this hysteria that was being applied to them. Another interpretation could be that they knew they didn't have this hysteria, but they could have been scared to stand up.
If you ask me, the kids who designed all this deserve an A+. And if you ask their teacher, Alex Green, he'll pretty much say the same thing. And that adults should be following the lead of these teenagers to create a national museum for disability history.
If this is the work that 35 design and history students can do in 1 year, collectively as a society, we ought to have a place for this history writ large. And that seems to me a settled fact of the exhibit.
That's Alex Green, along with a few members of his 11th grade class from the Gann Academy outside of Boston. Cool kids.